Every lap in under a minute. Every move made to matter. Every decision impacting the outcome of the race. Supercars in Perth. Every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars. Unforgettable.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey everybody, V8 Sleuth Podcast powered by Repco, and this is the start of a massive week. The Repco Bathurst 1000, it's race week at Mount Panorama, and because of that, we're stepping up the pod game this week. Every day of the week, a new pod for you to enjoy. It's Bathurst week, we have to do it. Will Dale is with me as we take a look on this episode at determining, or trying to determine, the greatest Holden model to compete in the great race. I've got a funny feeling, mate, today we are not going to agree on a single thing here.
I'd be surprised if we did. We've got a few cars to choose from, don't we?
There's a few.
Holden's been there for a while.
Has been for a while, but this year, 2022, it is the last time that a Lion car will compete in the race. It is Bathurst, the Bathurst of all Bathursts. It's the race that began in 63 after it moved from Phillip Island. Holden, in some way, shape or form, has always been there. Who would have ever thought that we would ever be talking about the day that this has come, that this would be the last? And I know it's kind of been the last. We had the last one in 2020 because of that's when the brand was wound up by GM. 2021, they're still racing Commodores. Was expectation that they'd be moving into Camaros earlier, but it hasn't happened. But I think it's actually, and I know some people are, oh, the Holden thing, it's still going. But the fact remains that I think this has worked out really well for 2022, because in the first time for 3 years, we're going to have a full strength, real proper Repco Bathurst 1000. And when I say that, Kiwis will be able to come, Borders are closed, we're back to the normal October date.
Full camping areas. Trackside areas.
We're out of the other end of, all the COVID.
Big proper podium.
Proper podium, all that stuff. We're back to the Bathurst 1000 that we know and love. The last few years it's been compromised because it had to be.
Yeah, the Bathursts we had to have.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of people who've already commented to us on socials or an email or through our website that they're coming to Bathurst because it is the last one for a Holden. So whether you like it or you don't, or you love the ZB Commodore or you don't, or whatever you think, this is it. This is the final chapter for Holden. And we thought that for today's pod to start off race week, we'd take a look at the general over the years. And because it's been there the whole way through from 63, the EHS4 got them started, not in a big way in terms of factory teams and cars, and we go right through to the ZB supercar of today. So I guess the big premise here, we're trying to get to the point of which is the greatest model Holden to compete in the great race. So the EHS4 probably doesn't win, although it's got a pretty amazing story. It was kind of the homologation special that they had when they didn't have a homologation special. I'm doing this in inverted yes. commas that you can't see listening to this pod.
If you can hear the italics in his voice.
I'm talking in italics, yeah.
And this is the thing, because when Holden first arrived at the great race, General Motors was not involved in motor racing anywhere around the world.
And that was the case for a while.
Yeah.
That was the global edict from head office. But, of course, being Australians...
life finds a way.
They found a way. It's the dealers, hear that, italicised,
yes.
who are doing the racing, not the manufacturer, which we all know was the biggest crock of crap in the history of Bathurst. The Holden dealer team...
Yes.
It was the Holden team.
Yeah. Funny how the marketing budget was very, very big.
Yeah. Got to tell people how well you go.
It's true.
Yeah.
So this homologation special, the EHS4, had a few go faster bits added to your usual EH Holden, and funnily enough, it was produced in just the right number to be eligible to take part in the Bathurst 500 as it was back then.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, I know.
What a shot.
They didn't quite get the win, as you alluded to. There were six of the EHS4s on the grid, plus an FB Holden, the only FB Holden that ever started the race.
It's still up there going around trying to finish. Yes. Yeah.
The best placed Holden on that on that occasion was in second. That was Fred Morgan and Ralph Satch. And the significant thing about this car is it was actually Fred Morgan's road car.
Because you could do that in those days.
You could do that in those days.
Yeah. And in those days, there wasn't an outright winner. Not like today. It's all about the winner. It was there was first across the line, and that was a known thing. But it was really about winning your class. That was the – officially, there wasn't an outright winner, I think, for a couple of years after that, officially, although we all have outright winners in the history books from the car that finished the race
in the shortest period of time.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, they didn't even have proper qualifying sessions in the way that to set the grid in the way we'd understand it now. The car that was entered with number one on it
got grid
one first. Because they're all organized in class order, so the most powerful cars at the front and the least powerful, smaller ones at the back. Made sense for the period.
Yeah, and it took till 67 before practice time set the grid for the race. So that happened for the first few years up there. So if you were really good with the postie, you're probably a chance to get pole at Bathurst. I mean,
can you imagine if that was the way it was now?
Yeah. Oh, it's just a whole other world. And that's what I love about looking back at this race and some of the things over the journey that are just, you look at them now and go, wow, that is so different. It doesn't make it better or worse. It's just different. It all evolves. And hearing this conversation and talking about Holdens and looking, I mean, you pretty much are going through three nameplates to find which is the best. It's Monaro, Torana, Commodore and the iterations of each of those. So Holden in the mid-60s weren't really a factor in the great race. There were a couple of Holdens sniffing around, but nothing of significance or note. So it takes the first Monaro, the 327 in 68, to now put them in that firefight with Ford, which they turned up in 67 with the XR GT Falcon 1. So then Holden had to, and that's
all
really
right,
where
that's going.
All
racing,
right, if we have to, let's take them on. And that's where this whole amazing rivalry. And we talk about traditions at Bathurst. This is a tradition of Holden and Ford that's about to end. And yes, GMV Ford will carry on because of the Chevy Camaro. It's not the same, though. It's definitely not the same. Anyone who tries to sell you that story, it's not the same. It's kind of similar, but it's not the same.
It's not the same right now. There is that history there. They just need to further build the link and establish what's come before with what is happening now and what is going to come.
Totally. And this is, we talk so much about the tradition of Bathurst. There's a lot of different things that we would label as traditional that over time you go, well, actually, that's not as traditional as we thought. It's changed and evolved
over the last
20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see the marching koalas on the grid this year.
Why not?
Well, I don't think if we want them there, we're going to have to call them pretty soon.
Someone needs to.
Yeah, maybe not in a formal capacity.
If you book some accommodation, it's getting a bit late this time of race week. I mean, the Monaro's in the conversation, the 327 and the 350.
For sure.
The 327 was the car of choice 1 year and the 350 was the next year. And then it was gone and it was Torana's.
Yeah.
So it really didn't get a shelf life at being able to have a regular run at the mountain to really – yes, it's the first winner of 68, Bruce McPhee, Barry Mulholland, the infamous McPhee drove all the laps bar one and Mulholland got his one lap in and became a Bathurst winner because of it, which wasn't the first time they'd done that, by the way, not the last. But it's hard for me to put the Monaro, one of the Monaros, in as the greatest model Holden of all time just because it was such a short sample size.
The funny thing is, though, because it was such a short sample size, I mean, realistically, 2 years – undefeated both years.
Yeah.
Against very strong Ford opposition on both occasions, which managed to tread on their own toes.
I thought you were going to say something else.
I nearly did.
Then I thought, he's too nice to say that. He will not say that.
No, but yeah, they definitely tripped over themselves. But, they tripped over themselves because they were trying to beat a very strong opposition from the Monaros.
And the move to Torana, downsizing, going small, going for economy, going for less pit stops, less tyre wear. The theory was good. It's good theory.
Yeah.
But it took 3 years really to play out. And, of course, it's the 50th anniversary this year of Brock's first Bathurst win, 1972, Hardy Frodo 500. The last year it was a 500 miler before it became the 1,000 the following year. And in all reality, he probably should have won the following year as well.
Oh, yeah, you would think so. Again, that was an instance of Holden treading on its own toes in 73.
Go for max laps.
Yes, yes. Oof. And you know what? To his credit, Doug Chivas did. He tried to go for max laps and then he went a lap too far.
And had to push.
Yes.
And push.
Yeah.
And keep pushing.
Yes.
Yep.
But when you think of where those Taranas started in 70 and 71, they just were not, even certainly not over the course of one lap, but over the course of 500 miles, they were not a match for the big V8 Falcons at Mount Panorama.
And once they went phase three in 71, well, that moved the margin even further because Moffat's times from 70 to 71 were slashed by, I think it was 8-9 seconds a lap or something significant like that. I haven't got it in front of me. But
it was a big big margin between the advance of the car, the advance of tyres, and there was a fair bit of resurfacing that happened for that year as well. But if you remember, Bondi led the race.
In 70, in the early stages.
Yeah.
It was a good old duel there with the Fords, but couldn't keep it going.
No.
So. Taranas, when you think Taranas, you've got XU1.
The six-cylinder.
Then you go V8, of course, the L34 option of the SLR 5000, and then the A9X.
Mm.
The A9X was the ultimate Tirana, and it crushed. I mean, but it had a numerical advantage.
Mm.
By 78, the Ford interest had waned. Holden had, you know, been smashed in 77. So, in a way, Ford winning in the 1-2 in 77 was the best worst thing they ever did. The best thing because we're still talking about it, and it's the Ford crowning glory. But it riled the other side up to punch them so hard back the next year that they never really got a look in again until Dick Johnson got himself up and rolling. So their great day made for some miserable days, and all these A9X Taranas started hovering around with Moffat occasionally, Murray Carter, one or two other Ford blokes, and it was just a Tirana cakewalk. So the A9X is in play here for the greatest Bathurst race car because you've still got to do the job.
Oh, absolutely. And when you do the job by six laps, it's hard. You can't take a car like that out of the equation. That car was built very strong, was driven hard all day by Peter Brock and Jim Richards, and got the job done, as you say.
Every lap in under a minute means every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
So, I'll put this to you, Will.
Mm-hmm.
Is the A9X Tirana the greatest Holden Bathurst race car?
It's up there.
But it's not, in your mind, the greatest?
No.
Is the L34 in contention?
Two wins, but the L34 won in spite of itself. That you look at that entire era you talked about, the only year where Ford put up a properly strong fight with multiple options for the win was 77.
Yep.
The L34 failed in its first attempt, again, not through a lack of trying in 74.
It was six laps in front with Brock at one stage. Yeah.
Yes, and then, of course, that was the first year of the car. It was fragile in a lot of areas, including oil delivery, and that's what spelt the end of that car. 75, only realistic Ford challenger that day was Moffat, and that ended not well. Mm. And same with 76.
So is it Holden's fault or the L34's fault that there wasn't the opposition there that is disqualifying it from the ability to be classed as the greatest Bathurst model of all time?
The fact that the car that won in 76 did so limping with a significant mechanical issue towards the end.
Yes.
If you can do that, well, I guess Moffat did that in 77 as well. But
well, he owned the other car, so exactly, he could control the opposition to some degree. So L34.
Not for me.
Not for you. No, not for me either. I've got another one in mind. But if we go to the XU1, I guess
right
feeling
up there.
You're warming.
It's right up there.
Okay. All right, We'll come back to that. So Commodore, we've got a pile of Commodores to go through. And some of them are, you know, not real massive changes in terms of a VC, VH, you know, they're by.
Real changes gave them more changes than the actual model change.
That's right. So you've kind of got the VC Commodore, because the VB didn't race with the dealer team as the primary car at Bathurst. It wasn't the championship that upgraded to VC in 1980, but there were some VBs in that race.
Including the car that finished third.
Yeah, and of course you've got to consider too that the VH model, and of course then you had the Brock SS VH, won two in a row with the one car, 82 Brock Perkins, the same car won again in 83, the actual chassis, the actual car. Yeah,
with significant modifications due to the rules of the era allowing like the bigger flares,
bigger rear deck panel spoiler, new livery, special mild, yes. And you know, but it's in the history book. So, and we're not talking about specific actual chassis. We might cover that off a bit later, but we're talking about the greatest Holden model of all time, because we're going by models rather than chassis numbers per se. I've got a few theories on that. We'll cover that off in a bit. So Commodores, I think VH is kind of in the mix, but again, does it really capture, does the VK big banger? Of course, the VK was there in Group C form and then in Group A form and won with Gricey in 86. The VK, Group C, Group A,
you could make a strong argument.
Does it come in the mix there? Because it's won across both the eras and nearly won in 85, it's got to be said, too, against the odds.
In a form that it was never meant to race in for an extended period of time. I mean, when the VK was first allowed into Group A, it was overweight because it had a 5-litre engine, which put it into the next weight bracket, so they brought it back under a little under 5 litres to trim like 200 kilos or so out of the car, had a 4-speed gearbox. There were all these homologation upgrades that were meant to come in for Bathurst 85 and they didn't quite arrive in time. So they got all those for 86 and then Gricey demolished everyone with that less small built chickadee Commodore of Graham Bailey's.
So the VK is in the conversation because it's the only Commodore that has won across the two categories, Group C, Group A, two very different rule sets and structures of car. And
again, strong turbo opposition and strong international opposition as well in terms of BMW 635s, Nissan Skyline Turbos.
Harder race to win in 86 than 84. I mean, 84, the last of Group C, yes, there were piles of other cars, Mazdas, the Bimmer, Falcons, Bluebirds, but you always just felt that in that Group C era, Brock and the dealer team had the upper hand every time they went there, just about.
They were the team to beat.
Well, when you win six out of seven,
I mean, you earned the right to be,
you know, like, no wonder he virtually had a mortgage on the place, really. Like, he was the landlord. Like, he ran the joint. And once it went Group A, though, he lost a lot of that advantage. And the Holdens did as well, which they kind of reclaimed over time. So then the other issue is that the VL, there's two different variations of the VL Commodore.
The Carby version
that Brock wins in 87 and the fuel-injected version that wins in 90. There's a lot of love for that 1990, the Walkinshaw Group A VL SA, what is it? Group SV?
SV.
Group A, yeah, yes, that's the one.
The SV for special vehicles.
That's it. So there's a lot of love for that car over the journey. Maybe not at the time, but things have a history of being a bit better as time ticks by. So
it's remarkable how cars look better after they win.
Winning cars are good cars. Yeah. And I really reckon that that 90 car, which, of course, it was the 88 Tom Walkinshaw car that the rear end fell out of, it's a great story. It is one of the – I know there's some people say, yeah, we knew we could run hard all day, and that's one of the greatest upset wins in the history of Bathurst because it sounds strange that the factory Holden teams had an upset win, but at the time, with all those Sierras, the Nissan that was debuting – there's no way that thing, anyone in their right mind would have confidently had money on them to win the race.
Absolutely. I mean, that entire, once turbos took over Group A, that was a very dark period for the Commodores, for anyone with a normally aspirated car, really, but realistically it was only Commodores. It was definitely not a race that anyone outside of the Commodore teams would have fancied themselves a chance of winning.
I put the VL, and of course there are two versions of the VL, it's a bit like the VK. It went across two types, won a couple of Bathursts. I think I'm on the not on the fence, but I think my favourite Bathurst Holden is actually not going to be in the category of the greatest Bathurst Holden of that model because I love that Brock 87 car. I think that's just the best thing ever. And the great irony is it's the Holden that had no Holden support, that, you know, was in the wake of the whole bust up earlier in the year. So
It wasn't even the Holden from that team that was meant to finish.
Yeah, it was lucky to start, yeah. Lucky to finish. But it brings me to the next one.
Mm.
The VN Commodore is one of very few Commodore models not to win the Bathurst 1000.
Mm.
It only went there as the primary car, as the main weapon of top Holden teams once.
Yeah,
that year,
and it came second that year in the hands of
Bryce
and Percy.
It was best of the non two door sports cars.
Yes, best of anything that wasn't a Nissan GTR.
Mm. It beat the two other GTRs.
That's true. Mm. That's true. Mm. And beat all the Sierras. What were left of them?
Yeah. Yep. Then you get a Commodore V8 touring car / V8 supercar era.
Mm.
VP, but you could actually take a VP, not the teams, the big teams did this, but VPs could become VRs, which could become VSs. It, in fact, could have started as VNs.
Yes.
So that floor pan that ran you all the way through there, I think if we're going to distinguish a car or a model as the greatest, you have to pick a model. You can't say it's a floor pan. It can help be the reason why you've picked a specific model along the way. And the VP's got to be in the mix.
Oh, it delivered an iconic Bathurst win in 93 with Larry Perkins and Greg Hansford.
But
it
had a parity adjustment in the lead-up.
Did it ever, yes.
And the Ford teams were not in that race. They were not.
It's funny, I was actually flicking through the auto actions from that era recently and came across an excellent sort of side-on view of the shape of those wings and the shape of the original Holden wing,
which
looked like a paddle pop stick, and the shape of the eventual one they got, which was, let's just say, suited to make downforce. But, well, you know, that was the game back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's always been the game.
Well, it still is now, really.
If it's no good, find a way to make it better. If you've got to politic or spend money or
complain
whatever it is.
Loudly.
That's the aim of the game. So the VP's in the mix for me, not just because of the Larry win, but just a clean, crisp car that started that era for Holden of the V8 formula. Once they tweak that aero thing, they're away.
Do you like the look of the VP more than the VR?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about the VR.
I think it's livery-based for VRs, VRVSs. I love the Holden Racing Team 97 cars.
Mm-hmm.
The 96 cars a bit, it doesn't really grab me as much. But the VP, it actually, and this is an interesting point, when we were doing Neil Crompton's book last year and we were looking for an image of a Coke Commodore to put on the front cover, I found a really great shot of him in a VP Coke car in 94 at Sandown. Mm. Side on, flame out the side. And then there was another shot that we used, which is 96 VR. It's at Eastern Creek on the short track coming through the Little Link Road. I had the VP because it had the flames and it looked great. I love that car. It's number 7. It's Neil. It's Coke. But he actually said to me, he said, it looks really old, but the VS doesn't look as old.
It makes a good point, especially with a Coke livery. It worked on the VR really well.
Yeah.
It looks much slimmer as a car. I don't know what it is.
It's a really weird one. But the VP to VR or VS, same thing, just the front air dam change and headlights and stuff, it looked like 5 years apart rather than one.
Yeah.
And
went well at Bathurst.
Yeah, and then you go, well, the VR won twice.
Yeah.
The VS won once with Larry and Russell.
Mm.
Then you get into the – so, you know, Holden are in great form here because then the VT just fires them away. Then they keep winning across VX, VY, VZ with Scaife and Kelly in 05. So they have that stretch of, 99 to 05 where they're undefeated across a bunch of teams and drivers. So they're all achieving – all these model changes are still achieving similar results. Two Bathurst wins for that one. Two for that one.
Through a lot of evolution of technical rules and tyre rules, we went from open tyres to control tyres.
Yep.
Through into Project Blueprint, where the McPherson strut front end was taken away and replaced with a double wishbone setup.
Well, when you think about it too, once we get into that streak, the VT wins twice, the VX wins twice, the VY wins twice, the VZ wins once, very nearly twice, and then 888 come into the mix and just sort of stop it in its tracks.
Yes.
So then you get into that next era, we're into VE and then the VE2, which is a small facelift upgrade of the same car, really. I mean, it's technically a different model, but it's the same core thing, very small tweaks.
And the VE is the first of the era of cars where yes, from probably about 5 or 6 years earlier, they weren't built from a shell. They plucked off the line. They were built from a flat pack kit that was assembled by Gibson Motorsport and then distributed to other teams.
Which not everybody did.
Yeah. But then you had the VE where to get it to achieve physical parity with the Ford, they had to do a bit of a cut and shut.
Yeah, it had to fit the dimensions of the category.
Mm. So the VE race car doesn't – that's why the VE race car looks a bit different to the VE road car.
Not much.
You couldn't
spot the difference compared to a Mustang in more recent times.
Yes.
But if you look at VE, it wins – so it rolls out in 07,
mm-hmm.
but it's right in the period that 888 got going.
Yeah, which is ironic given the VE blew them away in the championship, but at Bathurst didn't work out that way.
No, so – 09 it wins, 10 it wins, by then it's Series 2 with Lowndes and Scaife, 11 it wins, 12 it wins. So 4 in a row for VE/VE2. That puts it in the mix because that's longevity, that's sustained performance and achievement. It's locking out podiums. It's in the top few positions. You know, it's 2 of 3 on the dais at Bathurst. It's not just one lone one at the front and 6 Falcons chasing at home. It's in the mix. I've got it in my top three.
That's fair. No, on those numbers, that makes total sense.
And it was
sense.
Multiple teams.
It was multiple teams.
888.
But this is the other point.
Yeah.
So that period of dominance from Ford was with 888, and then what happened once 888 moved to
they
Holden?
They kept winning.
So you could make the argument that maybe team had a bit of an influence there in the end
team
results.
Team has a massive part. So, yeah, 2 for HRT, 2 for 888 in that period. But and then we go VF. So then we change the game where the – and this is what I find really interesting about Car of the Future in Gen 2. So VF and ZB. VF, of course, is based on an Australian-built Commodore road car.
Yes.
But we go to the point where all the chassis are underneath the same.
Yes.
It's just the way that it's evolved. And you know what? It was the right way to evolve with what happened with the car industry later on.
Yes.
Because you couldn't have got the stuff because they weren't making them anymore. So by having this bespoke chassis, and I know a lot of people are, it's not a real race car, it's not a real Holden, it's not a real Ford. Reality is if the manufacturer accepts it and puts their badge on it and allows it to happen, it is. Mm. Might not be in the hearts and minds of some people, but I also argue, particularly with the ZB, the supercar version is an Australian-built element. The chassis, it's designed and built in Australia.
Mm.
It's more Australian than the road car was.
Yeah. Basically, all the panels are created and laid up in Australia because, well, you couldn't just bring them all in.
And, of course, the car's underpinnings are designed by the teams.
Yes.
You know, yes, there's a lot of 888 parts across the various teams and cars. Some of them are customer cars. But it's more of an Australian-built – just stop and think about it this way. It's more of an Australian-built race car than the road car was.
Yes.
So, you know, the great irony of all that, there's people who've engineered, designed, tweaked, tuned, developed, refined, succeeded with stuff that was made, created, designed in Australia.
Yeah.
So
you just can't buy one off the showroom floor.
That's right, which is what a lot of people stick to. But I would actually – I've got the ZB – and the VF really high in my rankings. And a lot of people will not like that. But the reality is the level of success, the wins, the poles, the podiums. I mean, look at the ZB. I mean, in terms of its – so when did it roll out? 2018. So a win with Lowndes.
Yep.
Mustang wins with McLaughlin in 19. Van Gisbergen wins in 20. And Chaz wins last year. And then this year, this week – who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what we might get? We might get 36 wins for Holden or they might stop at 35. Ford might get to 21. We'll see. But I reckon there's a really big argument for the ZB to be considered. And you know what? People will be driving off the road if they're driving to Mount Panorama right now on their road trip from wherever they're coming or going from and screaming, Noonan, you've lost your mind. But when I preface the point with that Australian developed and designed stuff by these supercar teams – it's really easy to get caught up in all the other stuff, but look at the results. Look at the achievements of how many times it's won the race, where it's been in the whole situation of things, the Australian development and design and the DNA of the teams that are Australian is in it.
Mm.
So I think it's in the mix when you win. So what's ZB won now? 4 Bathursts. 3 Bathursts.
3 out of 4.
Could win 4.
Yeah.
Could win 4 out of 5. And that's across obviously Triple Eight with two, Walkinshaw's with one. It's got to be in the mix. I know a lot of people won't like it, but it's totally in the mix. It goes against the romance element for some, but the numbers don't lie.
And it's also in an era where it is probably the race is probably as hard to win as it ever has been when you look at the competition between all the different teams, between the two different marks. It is probably as close as it's ever been in terms of the level of competition.
Yeah.
It's 3 out of 4. It's.
Do you think I've lost my mind when I have that theory about the modern cars?
I reckon you're right that a lot of people will think you have.
Well, maybe a lot of people thought I never had any clue beforehand. So, well, you know what? We've got to pick. We've gone through them. We've talked about some of the pluses and minuses and the possibilities and the qualifying elements. But, Wildar, what is the greatest model, Holden, to compete in the Great Race? And what is supporting your theory?
Okay, for mine, it is the LJ Tirana XU1.
Oh.
Controversial, not a V8.
No, I'm not. I'm intrigued and interested.
So why I believe this is the greatest is that this is a car that, as has been proven time and time again, probably shouldn't have won the race on the basis of to win at Bathurst, you need horsepower.
True.
So off went Holden, off went Harry Firth, and thought, no, let's see what we can do with this. And they engineered a beta package. And as you said, okay, so it rained in 72. Maybe if it was dry throughout, maybe the Phase 3 would have gotten it over the dealer team Tiranas or any of the other Tiranas. In 73, that was an even race.
Yeah.
And it was the team that had the least issues, kind of as it is today. It's the team that had the least issues that would have gotten to the line first.
Mm.
And that was with a 6-cylinder car against a V8.
Yeah.
So for mine, that's why that car overachieved.
Yeah, totally.
Or it achieved in the face of much bigger, stronger opposition.
It's hard to come up with another model that did that for Holden. They were either pretty even gunfight or at a numerical advantage or at a car speed advantage.
Mm.
Not many times were in a Holden, maybe in the Group A era more so. It's probably the only other time where they're outgunned by turbos and stuff, but they still pulled some wins.
It's true.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
So what about you?
Good. Yeah, I like it. No, I like where you're going there.
Yeah.
And I think it's been a really tough one. I did flirt with ZB. I really did, because of all the reasons I said before.
Mm-hmm.
I flirted and I went against what I said earlier on. Remember I said about the floor pan?
Yes.
Well, the VN, VP, VR, VS flows. The VT, VY, VZ flowed right through. But, of course, each of those cars had other development areas that the rules maybe changed, controlled tyres came in, teams develop engines, suspensions get better, shocks, all that sort of stuff. But I think it's really hard to pick something that is in the modern era. It needs time to marinate. If something's going to be – I mean, it's really easy now, and you hear it in certain places and certain people, that's the best ever this, the greatest that, the – you know, it's the buzz thing of pop culture at the moment and social media and all that stuff. So it's just a really easy take to have, to see something and go, wow, that's the best I've ever seen of that, or that's the best driver, car, football player, band, whatever, to just make a headline.
It needs to stand the test of time.
Yeah, so that's why I went, I just can't pick anything from the recent past modern era. I think if we had this chat in 10 years' time, I reckon a ZB or a VF might even, or VE might end up in the mix there.
Mm.
But for mine, it's a little bit of what you said. It's a little bit of that whole, which was the car that overcame. And for me, it's the VL, the two V types of VL.
Yep.
The Carby Brock car, and I love that car. That is my favourite Bathurst Holden of all time.
Mm.
The number 10 against the odds, the Holden that wasn't a Holden. It didn't have a badge on it, did it? Did
they replace
it with the HDT mobile?
I don't think Brock it had a badge.
Logo? I think it had a Brock logo on it anyway. Yeah. And then the 1990 version, that's against the odds.
Mm.
So it's the same theory. And it's funny that we deliberately didn't discuss where we were going and why. No. But we've ended up going different places for the same reason.
Yeah.
So for me, the VL Commodore is the greatest Bathurst Holden for me, and that's what this is about. Everyone listening has got their own take, and how can you not say the A9X? How can you not say this? But it's what we're all of different eras. We're all of different tastes and genres and levels of what we've seen and what we've been exposed to. So for me, the VL, 87, yes, it doesn't win on the road, but it wins against the odds, not just against the odds of the opposition, but the odds of Brock's situation and, you know, all the stuff. No factory support, exiled.
The exact opposite of factory support.
Yeah. He went there, povo spec. And then the 1990 car that was up against all these turbo cars, and it, you know, when it came up for sale, what was it, 6, 7, 8 years ago?
Mm.
Man, I'll tell you this. I won't tell you how much it went for because I've got a bit of an idea of the current owners of what they paid for it. But the bidding and the numbers that were being thrown about that car were through the roof, which tells you that there's a resonance with that. And it's not a Brock car.
No.
So Brock and Holden, you think the greatest Holden of all time has got to be a Brock car, or the greatest model. He's part of my little mix of VL, but I'm opting for VL. And it's so hard to pick one. But
it is very hard, isn't it?
They're my reasons, and they're the same as yours. It's in the face of adversity and up against opposition that's probably better than you on the day that – gives me the thought that the VL is the greatest model Holden of all time in the great race.
And we've both chosen vehicles that were very strongly based on road cars.
Yeah, and I'm interested to know in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time, if we revisit this, have we changed our mind? Does a more modern VE or a VY or a VF get into the mix? Because as time's gone on, and I'm always interested to know what's the value of those things going to be? We know that they're going for big money to collectors before they've even finished.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that the winning car from the last couple of years has already been sold before it wins is, you know, if you'd said that in the 70s or 80s, everyone would have thought you were on drugs. So
everyone would have thought, wow, Harry's really wheeling and dealing.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, there's some serious deals going on here. So if they're the greatest models that we've picked, what's your favourite individual car of all time? Is it an XU1 or is it a different actual car?
So funnily enough, I came into this going to say the 1990 Bathurst winning VL.
It's good enough to be the favourite car, but it's not good enough to be the best model. And those two things can be different.
Well, it's true. Like, realistically, the XU1 had its shot to win the race. It went into the 73 race with a legitimate shot to win.
Yep.
It was
with a better shot than it did in 72.
With a better shot than it did in 72. At no point in the VL's history, and probably 90 as much as any year, did one of those cars go into the race as even an outside contender.
Still outside though.
Yeah.
Yep, fair point.
Yeah. And the amount of engineering that was executed on those VLs in 90, not just by the Holden Racing team, but also by Larry Perkins, who came third, very unfortunately, could have won the race also. But the amount of work that went into ensuring both of those cars could be driven flat out for 1,000 kilometres in an era when it still wasn't the case where you could do that, or you would generally not plan to do that. That seals it for me.
And that's, now that you mentioned that, that's kind of where that drive it hard all day thing started.
Mm.
Up till then, well, Brock didn't have to because he usually had such a lead, he could sort of take it a bit easy here and there.
Well, Gricey did in 86.
Yeah,
that car was driven flat out for all the laps that it was there.
Yeah, that's true. But the 90 bulletproofness, that's a good point. That's a good point because we don't think of that so much now because the cars are so reliable and they drive them flat chat.
When they break, it's a massive shock.
And usually if the car's not finishing the race this year or the modern era, it's accidents that are taking them out, not mechanical dramas. And they're fully professional race teams that run these cars now. We don't have 45 privateer cars that have been put together in back sheds over the journey and 20 of them are out by lap 40 or, you know, all that sort of stuff from back in the day. So it's an interesting one to look back on. It's a little strange to think that we're even talking about this, but this weekend will be the last time that Holden and Ford will go at it. Holden, as I said before, 35 wins. It's an amazing number. For those playing at home, can you name every Holden winner? Can we go through it between us?
Oh, between us. Name them all? Sorry, I thought you were speaking directly to the audience. No,
well, I'm sure there's plenty
from
of listeners.
From microphone to speaker.
Who, all 35, they could recite them off the top of their head, wham, bam, done.
Well, we've touched on the first one, which is Bruce McPhee and Barry One Lap Mulholland in 1968.
69, Colin Bond, Tony Roberts.
So the next one isn't until 72, where it's PB on his own in the Toronto.
75, he's with Brian Sampson. 76, it's Bobby Morrison, John Fitzpatrick. 77's a swear word year for Holden fans.
Not for Ford fans, but definitely for Holden fans. But they had it pretty good the next 3 years, where it's Brock Richards, Brock Richards, Brock Richards. First two times in Toronto's, last time in a Commodore.
And then the hat trick starts again. 82, Brock Perkins. 83, Brock Perkins and John Harvey, who, of course, started the race in that car.
But not Phil.
Not Phil. He was left out. PB and Larry in 84 to round out the Group C era.
And then 86 with Alan Grice and Graham Bailey in the Chickadee VK.
Love that car.
Great looking car.
87 is Brock Parsons and Peter McLeod. Of course, John Crooks, the man who missed out there.
In what was his only appearance in the Bathurst 1000.
Yeah, he never actually turned a racing lap in that race.
Mm. Mm. And then we go to 90 with Grice and Wyn Percy in the Holden Racing Team Commodore.
So that's the first for HRT, but 93 is the last for a Holden engine in a Commodore with Larry and Greg Hansford.
Then we go to 95 where it's Larry again, this time with Russell Ingall in a VR Commodore, the last to first victory. And please don't at me to say that he didn't actually run in last place at any point during the race, which is, yes, technically correct.
He was the last car on the track in the race. The Wayne Russell car was parked up in the pit lane.
Yes.
And started X amount of laps behind.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So I know there's people who keep chipping us about that on socials, but seriously, seriously.
Technically correct, but last to first.
Yeah, go with it. I'm with it. 96 is Lowndes and Murphy. 97 is Perkins and Ingall again in the VS. And then that great streak starts in 99 with Steve Richards and Greg Murphy in the Wins Gibson Motorsport car. Of course, we lost Gary Dumbrell this year, who was a big backer of that team and actually owned the team for 2000, the Gibson Motorsport team. But that was Tanner and Bhagwana's win. That car is at Bathurst this weekend as part of the Repco display in the museum. I'm hearing it will be part of the parade laps on Sunday morning, at 10:15. There's a bunch of cool stuff that's going to roll out as part of this Repco 100th anniversary celebration with a bunch of cool cars. So the 2000 winner, I'm not sure who's driving it yet, but I don't think Garth will be driving it, though. He's got a commitment in about an hour after that. So yes. I think Triple Eight want to have his head in the game, because I would presume most of the co-drivers start the race in the Bond Nearer. So it's just easier to just have them sitting back relaxed and ready to go.
A lot of cool cars in that Repco exhibition too. A lot with Holden engines, it must be said in this particular episode. So we're at 2000 now. So 2001, that would be Mark Scaife and Tony Longhurst in
Golden Child.
Yep, Golden Child Part 1, then Golden Child Part 2 the following year with Scaife and Jim, lovely bunch of people, Richards.
By the way, if you haven't pre-ordered the book, pre-order the book. It's gone to the printers. Looks sensational, 400 pages, hardcover, Jimmy's full career from New Zealand to Australia, from Anglias right through to TCM Falcons and everything in between. It's a ripper. Have a look on the website, superstore.v8sleuth.com.au. Had to slip that in. 2003's Lap of the Gods, Greg Murphy, Rick Kelly. They did it again in 04. Not in the same car, though. A lot of people think it's the same Kmart Commodore. It was the sister car, and, of course, it was number 15 with the Spider-Man livery on it.
Who says a special livery can't win at Bathurst?
Happened once.
Yes.
It wasn't a fully different livery, but it was an added-on. Yeah, it counts.
I think it counts.
Scaife and Todd Kelly, 2005. 2009, Will Davis and Garth Tander. 2010, Craig Lowndes, Mark Scaife. 2011, Garth Tander, Nick Percat. 2012, Paul Dumbrell with Jamie Wincup. That gets us to the end of the Blueprint era. And then the Car of the Future era took a couple of years to get a win.
Yeah, a couple of Ford wins in 13 and 14 before Craig Lowndes and Steve Richards got the job done for 888 and the VF Commodore in 2015, which had also often forgotten about. That car, the VF received a bit of a parity adjustment that year. It had a slightly higher rear wing than it had in the first couple of years.
I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah, yeah. 2016 was the Techno win with Will Davison and Jonathan Webb. not the first car across the line, which was also a Holden Commodore,
yep.
Jamie Wincup and Paul Dumbrell.
Yep.
2017, the very popular Erebus win of David Reynolds and Luke Yeldon. 2018, Craig Lowndes and Steve Richards getting the job done again in what was the the Arrivederci Lowndesy tour, yeah, as Neil Frompton called it.
It was.
Craig's last full-time year. 2019 was not a Holden win, but the last couple of years, 2020, Shane Van Gisbergen and Garth Tander, and 2021, Chaz Mostert and Lee Holdsworth.
Congratulations to all those who got all 35 or who were preempting them before we ran through them. I just thought it was good to document the history before we wrapped up this podcast. It's a big week at Mount Panorama. This is the first of a bunch. We'll be doing a bunch of podcasts throughout the course of the week to bring you up to speed with what's been happening at Bathurst on each of the days. Tomorrow we're doing an episode focused on the 1992 race, which is 30 years on. You're all a pack of... Yep, that's the one. You know the one. I'm not going to go with it. We've also got a massive week at Bathurst. We've got our V8 Sleuth book range is in the Repco Trackside store. Down in Harris Park, the merchandise area has been completely redesigned this year. It's going to be a really cool thing. Lots of celebrations over Peter Brock's 50th anniversary of his first win from 72. There's a whole pile of stuff. We've got the whole team up there. V8sleuth.com.au will be pumping with lots of coverage of the events over the course of the whole week and the weekend. Plenty of news, plenty of stuff of what's going on the track. It's set to be a big weekend. I'm almost tired before we've even got there, Will, because the build-up to this year's race has been off the charts. But you know what? I've said it before. I'll say it again. It is Christmas for car racing fans. And I tell you what, we love that our followers on V8 Sleuth, the people who listen to our podcasts, read our website, follow what we do on socials. We really appreciate it. Please come up and say g'day to all of us over the course of the weekend if you see us wandering around at Mount Panorama. We appreciate the support. That is the greatest Holden model episode of all time. You can all argue among yourselves now. We're going to head off, but we'll be back tomorrow with a look back at the 1992 Great Race. We'll chat to you then.
Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years, from the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present and the stars that steered and built them. AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.